Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You're listening to an irreverent podcast.
For more unholy content from our friends, head to irreverent.fm.
Hey friends, welcome to the Speaking in Church podcast with me, Josie.
And me, Spencer. And this week...
Sorry, I was gonna say that, but you say it now. Your turn.
This week, our guest is Josh Holm, the founder and creative director of Castles in Queens. Josh is a 26-year-old fashion designer based in Los Angeles. He grew up in South Korea and was adopted at the age of 5. He attended Azusa Pacific University, but went on later to live overseas in Osaka, Japan to study fashion. His current collection follows the narrative of an American girl caught in human trafficking. His brand hopes to bring awareness to the causes of human trafficking through the debut collection, Lovers. Please give a warm welcome to Josh Holm.
Woo, yeah, woo.
Hey guys, happy to be here.
Great to have you. I'm stoked about this conversation, mostly because I have a lot to say about white women in the evangelical church, but you know, also because I'm very passionate about the subject.
So
Josh, if you want to just kind of give us a background, I've known you for a few years. We met at APU. And so I know you have a very deep and just like, I don't even know how to describe it. Your story is very deep. And so you don't have to go into like total details, just kind of give a brief overview of where you are now, what led up to, your clothing brand and the Lovers collection, and highlight just how you've been involved and or why you're passionate about human trafficking.
Yeah, of course. Well, first and foremost, thank you guys for having me. Love to kind of share my story, and I'm stoked to kind of have this conversation with you guys. To summarize kind of my journey here, I attended APU for college in Southern California, and I graduated with a major in theology, as well as I minored in leadership and took some classes in journalism. And so for me, I always thought I was going to start some kind of media news company that highlighted kind of cultural stories happening in America, hot topics, social narratives, and that was kind of always my goal. And with my story, I did grow up in South Korea with my biological mom and was adopted at the age of 5. And we were separated for a long time. So when I grew up in America, I grew up here in America starting at the age of 5. And so I always knew after college is when I wanted to take that personal journey to go and find her. And so when I turned 21, I graduated APU and actually sold my car to buy plane tickets to fly overseas to Japan, which is where she was staying at the time. I ended up finding her. It was amazing. We now have a great relationship. It's quite a crazy story when I think about it. I don't always think about it that much, but really is, you know, I felt like God's hand was on my story and kind of like our reconciliation. So with that, I actually spent the last two summers, or the two summers after that reunion in Japan. And so when I was there, I didn't speak the language. I'm actually half Korean, half Black. So it was kind of like a journey for me to even kind of make friends, be part of the community, have a job. And so what I did was I picked up a camera and I started shooting photos for this kind of event company. And when I was there one night, I was at an event that was a holiday in Japan. And I took a picture of these group of Japanese girls. And so being on social media, they asked for their picture via Instagram. So I ended up sending them the pictures. They thanked me. Again, the language barrier thing was very strong. And so when I sent the pictures, I just never thought I'd hear from them again. But about a week later, I got a message from one of them inviting me to this event. And so I said, sure, why not? I didn't have anything going on at the time. I ended up going to the event and Little Chicago. And so that was the first time I was introduced to the platform of fashion. And two, I ended up being like this girl's primary guest for the show. No idea why. But they were just really excited to have me. And so I always kind of pinpoint that moment as the light bulb for me in terms of like the moment I decided I wanted to go into fashion. And two, that kind of started my journey of what that looked like for me, kind of the why reason for me as well. And with that, that's been like the last 4 or 5 years with a lot of different kind of twists and turns within that journey, but that would be kind of the pinnacle moment of why fashion.
So when looking at, so we got to the point of why fashion. So when we think about like human trafficking, for example, is one of the reasons that your line is dedicated to this because unfortunately, like there is a habit of fat in the fast fashion industry, like trafficking or forced labor.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's a mix of everything. I think for me personally, I've always kind of had this artistic journey that I've taken since I was probably since post college. And for me, like I think any artist, they always try to figure out the reason why of why they want to create and put that out in the world. And so for me, I think why I chose fashion and this specific collection that you introduced in the beginning correlates with human trafficking was because personally for me, that is the easiest way that it makes the most sense to me. And also for me, I can't just put something out in the world I feel like an effect of change, at least for the culture that I'm surrounded with. And so human trafficking for this was very specific in the way that I wanted to kind of tell this story and bring the story to light. And kind of to summarize, like I interned in college at this nonprofit in downtown LA, and they are kind of like a hub for different kind of issues going around in Los Angeles. So they cover homelessness, they cover domestic violence, they cover runaways, they cover human trafficking. And so during my time there, my sophomore year of college, I kind of was just plugged into this nonprofit and what they did. And so one of the program managers took me out for an outreach, and that ended up being the first time I was introduced to human trafficking. And so what they do is they hand out resources to these women on the streets. And for me, I think there's a lot of different angles, and we'll have to kind of dive into this because I don't want to talk too much. But I think for me, like it was finding out my why, and bringing my personal experiences from what I experienced from sophomore year of college, and then that journey of just kind of researching more about human trafficking, what I could do to help. Two, even like being a man, you know, there are definitely like, I think it's been a journey just to find my role in this issue. And I think I am so proud to stand by, you know, the woman leading the issue and the voices that are necessary to bring healing to this issue. And then three, you know, as you guys know, as an artist and designer, like what fashion can do for this. And so, yeah.
It's so incredibly important for you to be a man, in my humble opinion, because I mean, one, it's not just women getting trafficked, right? I mean, more often than not, it's women. But boys are also trafficked. Men also have the potential of being trafficked, especially in other countries. And I mean, men just have more privilege, right? Like you have that voice that needs to be heard, and using that privilege is so incredibly important. So thank you for that, Josh.
Of course.
But I'm also curious, as a fellow artist, how you portray this narrative of human trafficking onto your fashion.
Yeah, so what I did was my friend, so the program manager who worked at that nonprofit in Los Angeles ended up becoming my one of my really good friend. And he has always kind of encouraged my journey to tell this story. And but for me, like, I consider her an expert in this industry. Like, she knows the ins and outs. She knows how to save these girls. She's friends with a lot of these girls. And she has her own dream of running a program. And kind of like the experiences that she had and what she feels like is most effective. So for me, when I was creating this collection and creating this campaign video and kind of this movement we wanted to start with Castles and Queens, I really used Monique as a soundboard to what it should look like. And for me, I felt like that was the most important part, was finding an expert and creating this content. And so with that, we actually created a video with actors and actresses, and the actress I picked to play the role of what was an American girl who ends up falling in love with her pimp, which is actually a very common theme in this world, especially in Los Angeles, and they call them Romeo pimps for that reason. And then she ends up being trafficked, and then she finds her way to freedom, which unfortunately isn't the most common story, but for this collection, I did want to show that element of hope in it. And so there was a lot of moving pieces, I felt like, in the art that I put out there, and that included a video, but that was also incorporated like in my clothes, with like the language and the narratives that we used. Personally, for me, like, I'll give you one example. One of the first night that, again, I was introduced to human trafficking, that night we were out, Monique, who is my friend who runs the program, stopped because she saw a girl that she didn't know. And so she knows a lot of these girls on the streets. So this girl is very young. I'm just sitting in the back of the car kind of observing. And she rolls down the window and says, "Hey, like, what are you doing? Why are you here?" And this girl must have been like 15, 16 and said, "Hey, like, you know, I'm here on the street because I have nowhere else to go. I'm in a lot of financial trouble. This is all I felt like I could resort to." And for me, like, those words, hearing from, you know, someone that could be, you know, a friend of a friend or your cousin or even like your little sister, kind of to put in perspective, and that's what they have to resort to. And so for me, like, one of the pieces that I kind of designed from was I created a varsity jacket for me, which reminds me of high school. And it's just like a very simple kind of metaphoric way of saying, like, you know, our youth are on the streets, and you know, I want to kind of create in a way where it just reminds you of the fact that, like, boom, okay, so like luxury varsity jacket, I think of high school right away. But for me, it should also, like, you know, represent the fact that, like, our youth who are exploited on the streets are also in high school, and kind of like this ironic just like metaphor that I feel like that we can easily kind of integrate art with if we want to.
I think that, so just, you're bringing a level of humanity to it of, hey, like, there's children out on the streets, because I think especially in the United States, you think of, because obviously human trafficking has such deep ties to sex work. And I think in the United States, when we think of sex workers, especially specifically like prostitutes, like, we think of women and we think negatively of them, but we never take the step further to be like, okay, but they're not just like adults making a choice. Like, there's children, there's girls, there's young boys that are on the streets. And a lot of them maybe didn't even have a choice, because whether they were influenced by a pimp or something, some of them just got to exactly what you said, of a place that they were so desperate that they felt like they had no other choice. And so I think exactly what you're saying of, like, it's just this reminder of, like, you're bringing a level of humanity to it that I think a lot of people miss, because, you know, we can hear statistics, we can hear about, I believe it's about, there's 40 million people worldwide that are trafficked every year, and 1 in 4 of them are children. And you hear those and you think, like, oh my gosh, that's so many people. But then it almost takes away the humanity, because those are 40 million individual people, 1 in 4 of them children, like exactly what you said, your sister, your cousin, your friend, like,
right.
It's just, it's so hard to think about.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that's one of the reasons that, like, I picked a very specific kind of lane and story element, you know, and this idea of like a Romeo pimp. And I felt like a lot of the response that we got, people were surprised that pimps kind of behave this way. And it's just like a very real, you know, fact of the matter, and a very, you know, and I think even bringing awareness to like how this operates, and, you know, like there's a love component, there's a toxic component, there's a toxic component, there's even like a home life component to the fact that, like, you know, one of the things that Monique said that will always stay with me is that like 90% of the pimp's job is already done when they meet the girls, because you know, they've had to grow up in this a lot of times, and a lot of us come from these broken homes that just make it easy to kind of fall into these traps, these words, and then you end up, you know, unfortunately, like out in the street.
I'm curious, because I mean, I went to school with you, so I know, I'm aware of your passion for this just from the peripheries. I'm curious, because you're so passionate and you've created art around it and you're very involved and this is like your life's passion, what do you think about hashtag save our children?
What do I think about, one more time?
Hashtag save our children.
Hashtag save our children?
Yes.
You know, that's a good question. I tend to, I think in 2020, like everything, you know, tends to be politicized. And so I think it's unfortunate that like such an unfortunate, you know, issue like human trafficking that needs, you know, sustainability, it needs volunteers, it needs the financial kind of push, gets sometimes like correlated with these hashtags. I think for me personally, I would probably have mixed feelings about it. I think for any, I think I've always been a fan of bringing awareness to a cause, because I think that promotes conversation. And I think anytime that promote, like conversation is promoted, I think that people tend to get educated. And I always think that's a good thing. And I think in America specifically, like education across the board just needs to happen. Now I think with Save the Children, I think there's like a lot of elements to it that are used for agendas. As you can kind of tell, I'm trying to like kind of tiptoe around the, around the question. But yeah, what do you guys think about it? I'm curious.
Well, so first of all, if you wanted to get political, feel free. Like, we have zero filters on this podcast.
But you also don't have to. I know that you have like a cool brand or whatever, so don't feel like you have to.
But
appreciate that.
For me personally, just like the backstory, the first time I was exposed to human trafficking, I was 14 years old at a Christian summer camp. We actually watched a documentary called Bought, B-A-H-T, which is obviously like talking about girls being bought, but baht is the currency in Cambodia. And at the time the documentary was produced, Cambodia was like the sex traffic capital of the world, basically. It followed the story of rescuing girls from the sex traffic and being brought to an organization called Rafa House International, which is a great organization because, again, this is one of those boots on the ground. They've been doing work for decades in Cambodia and have expanded throughout Southeast Asia to rescue women and children and men from trafficking. So that was the first time I was exposed to human trafficking, specifically sex trafficking. And growing up as a white girl in the United States, it was very removed. Like, I didn't realize that like girls in my own community could have the potential to be trafficked until I went to college and then started learning about, in the United States, you know, things like the Super Bowl, like that's a big time for, pimps to just bring girls into the city. And then other global events like the World Cup, like those things just are astronomical in the terms of like the sex industry. And so through my time at APU, getting to know just different organizations, whether it be A21, Dressember, or the international justice mission. Like, those are things that I think of, like, when I think of human trafficking, of like, oh, these are people that are like doing real work, and I've known about them for years. So I definitely see where you come from, Josh, with the like, okay, like, I have mixed feelings about the hashtag, because as someone that's known about this for pretty much like almost 10, maybe even more years now, like, it should be talked about more. But at the same time, the way that the hashtag came about, the way that people responded to it, was wrapped and fed in these sort of, exactly what you said, agendas, dare I say, some of them being like conspiracy sort of theories that I think just derail and distract from the actual mission and the actual education that needs to happen. So that's just kind of my feeling about the hashtag Save the Children sort of movement that came about this year.
Yeah, thanks for sharing.
Yes, thanks for sharing, Spencer. I'm not so nice as Spencer. I have a couple friends who are, you know, of different political persuasions than I am. I'm very liberal, very much a hippie, whatever. And it was very, like you said, it was very discouraging for me to see these, and maybe it's not all white women, maybe whatever, to see all these white essential oil moms marching up and down in parks saying, save our children, when they had like no solutions in mind, and they acted like nobody was doing anything about the situation. Which was weird, because people were like, oh, look, they all of a sudden they find these 30 kids or whatever in Georgia or wherever it was. And they're like, why can they do it all of a sudden? And in my head, I was thinking, they've probably been, you know, searching for these kids for years, and you just didn't know about it, because you can't know about it, because then it would ruin the whole thing. And I don't know, I guess from my passion and radical reading, I've just kind of come to know that there are people that are doing the job of finding people that are trafficked and rescuing them from the situation, like the FBI, or like these huge teams of software engineers who are just like trying to get rid of child pornography, or, and people ignore that because they don't like Black Lives Matter marches. It was very discouraging, especially to see all these quote unquote Christians being the ones to champion this against Black Lives Matter and trying to drown them out. It was, I felt like they were using the issue of sex trafficking to their own political benefit in that way.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said, and I think that's kind of why I preface, like, I think 2020 has had like a lot of those moments, to be honest, and I think people tend to want to stray away from, like, for example, like, when I feel like, if I go up to any human being and say, you know, here's the facts about human trafficking, this is what it is, I would think that 99.9% of people would say, like, oh, yeah, that's awful, like, that sucks. You know, then a certain percentage would ask, like, how can I help? But so I think, like, a lot of people, when you're referring to kind of maybe this, like, boomer generation, you know, when they pick up a hashtag like Save the Children, it's something that they feel like they can easily kind of connect to and advocate for, because there's not a lot of political strings attached to it. Not a lot of uncomfortable strings attached to it. Maybe as saying a statement like Black Lives Matter, you know, or going against like police brutality, things that are very real and prominent in our country, but maybe uncomfortable for some people to like kind of take a stand on. And so I think that's where my kind of bug is with like a hashtag like Save the Children, is that you're exactly right. Like, this doesn't need a 40-minute parade with posters. It needs like applicable solutions. And I think like one of the things that I've learned over the last 4 or 5 years is, what are these solutions? And you're exactly right when it comes to software programs and engineering, you know, trying to debunk this thing online to departments, you know, tackling, you know, inner city human trafficking or national human trafficking, to program managers, to social workers. And then you need your advocates, you need your volunteers. But yeah, it's, I see where you go, both of you guys are going with that for sure.
Yeah, it just feels like if you, I'm all about not bitching about something if you don't offer up a solution. And so my challenge to any of you who are listening who are all about hashtag save the children in a very QAnon way anyway, go become a software engineer. Go learn coding. Go, that's your solution. Go do that. All right. Thanks.
Well, and kind of just like jumping off of what Josh said, I think exactly the sort of point of when you talk about like hashtag save the children, or even just when you say like, oh my gosh, human trafficking is awful, like we need to stop it. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of like, there's not a lot of follow up in the sense of like, well, what are you doing about it? You know what I mean? Like it's, right. It's very much one of those things that like, you can support from afar and it makes you feel good and no one's going to follow up if you're actually doing anything about it, which I think is one of the biggest things that bothered me about the whole like hashtag save our children, because again, like it does start at education and I definitely think like people need more education. So if people researched the hashtag and got real facts about human trafficking and that caused them to follow some action, whether it be getting involved in local organizations, donating money, anything like that, then yeah, I think there's good from it. But I think just from my own perspective of what I've seen from my own timeline and the people sharing, like it was very much one of those, like, we're going to hashtag this for a couple weeks and then we don't talk about it anymore. And that's like what infuriates me the most about the whole situation.
Yeah, where's your passion now, homies? I don't see your hashtag.
You should hashtag under this podcast, save the children.
I know, for real.
Honestly, yes.
Listen to us.
Listen to us.
So going off that, that's a good place of where, what do you think are some good action steps for just, I think, especially if we want to tie it into like a faith community, you know, we all went to APU, we share some sort of commonality in a faith aspect, whether it be, I don't know what your faith journey looks like now, but at some point we all went to APU. I know you studied theology. We had some preaching classes together. So there's some commonality of the church, especially the church, like wanting to be involved. Like what is an active step that you think somebody, especially a person of faith, could take that is sustainable?
Yeah, that's a good, that's like the question. And I think that's, you know, always been kind of like this personal, I'm still on that journey of, you know, kind of like solving that question. And to be honest, like a lot of it is a self-reflective, like, you know, question when it comes to the issue of human trafficking as well. Like it, for one, like, let's just say how it is, like, you know, this issue exists because, you know, of the moralities of men.
Oof. Amen.
And men need to, you know, begin to, one, there needs to be a standard set and that needs to be followed. And two, that needs to be acted upon. And that's like a conversation in life for the person in church, a person out of church, like that, just be a good person, just be a good man. And I think like when men start becoming men, when fathers start becoming fathers, and not to like knock, you know, all the good men that are out there and the good dads, but at the same time, you know, that's a start. And so I think that for me, like, I, you know, I'm very aware of like my kind of role in this and the fact that, you know, my voice is needed, but at the same time, it's needed in a very specific lane. And I have no issue with that. And so one of the things that Monique said to me, and then so I just keep referring to her, but she's just, you know, one of my, you know, greatest friends, and I really admire her. But one of the things she said to me about, you know, this video that we put out was like, make sure that the saving figure in the video is not a man and is not a white woman. And that's kind of self-explanatory. Like, I don't think like much more needs to be said. And it's not a knock on all the great men or all the great white women in this world that are doing great things, but it just needs to represent like what it actually looks like. And so I think that's the start, for sure. Other ways to sustainably be active. I would say one, like actively do the research on local organizations that are doing the change. And a lot of them need help, to be honest. And, you know, one of the like basic things that I learned, like, you know, when I first was introduced to this was the girls don't have access to like basic needs. Like they don't have premenstrual, like, sorry, like I don't know the verbiage for this. Forgive me.
Feminine hygiene.
Yes, that's it. So they don't have like a lot of those needs. So a lot of the times that the things donated to these programs are things like that. And so it's the little things, like find out like what your local organization is doing and what they need. And then two, Josie, like, I love what you said, like, you know, become one of these things. If it's not your main gig, make it your side gig. If you're passionate about it, we can all do something. And for me, I've never ever used that as an excuse to, well, I can't do this. Like they don't need me. Like I'm not, you know, this and that. I don't have a degree in this. Just shut up. you can do it. You know, you can do something. And so, I would start there. And I think there, those conversations, obviously take more form, but that's like very like that. I feel like that's a great foundation to a conversation of like what it looks like to act on it. And for the church, honestly, talk about it. Talk about like what this issue is. Talk about where this issue starts, like in the heart. And I would say like, you know, have uncomfortable conversations. For me, like that's been one of my most biggest frustrations. In some church communities is like they don't tend to go to those uncomfortable places, and I would just challenge them that they do so.
Yeah, churches, instead of shaming women for their normal bodily functions, why don't you start, you know, avoiding toxic masculinity and be a little bit more sex positive, in the sense that, you know, sex exists, and if you continue to put these men into these shame cycles, then they will probably resort to, you know, sex trafficking for sex. That's like a very classic route, you know?
You just nailed it in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, I'm very concise.
you don't even need me for this podcast. I'm
just kidding. Well, so one question, taking ownership as a man, like I appreciate that. Like, I'm sure all women appreciate that, but also like, it's sad to say, but like you're in the minority of that. Like men don't, in terms of this, like they don't want to sort of take ownership, because then they feel like it almost like adds to the shame of them, because they're like, oh yeah, like being like the role I play as a man, like plays into human trafficking and like, and especially like sex work, like, oh, like that makes me feel awful. Like, how do you think that, like, what's a conversation to like combat that, of being like, hey, like acknowledging doesn't mean that you are like the root of all this evil, but acknowledging means that you want to do something about it.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think one of the kind of examples that I'll give that maybe makes more sense, at least it makes more sense to me when I think about this kind of question. Let's talk, you know, like when I think about the issues of the statement Black Lives Matter, and a lot of people have issue with that, or kind of denouncing the fact that police brutality exists, specifically to Black and Brown people in the United States. I think what they're maybe having a hard time getting past is this implicit bias kind of ingrained in them, whether from their upbringing, their cultural surroundings. Maybe it's the fact they didn't have a lot of Black and Brown people around them growing up, so it's just a very natural reaction. And so I think it's a very kind of similar, in my opinion, kind of concept of acknowledging the fact that it may even be a possibility. That could exist. And I think one of the things that we have to learn to do is not shame that and come around that. And I think Josie, you nailed it on the head. If like if there are parts of us, and I'm talking on the behalf of men, that have these, you know, motives, but in the deep parts of our soul, like, you know, it's wrong. You know, it contributes to, you know, these dark parts of society. You know, it doesn't raise, you know, better men. You know, it just harms women. Then that just needs to be brought to attention. And it doesn't mean you have to like post it as your Facebook status, but you should definitely have like that place and that space for transparency, so that it only promotes growth, and it's only promotes kind of this like evolution within you to get to this next place. And I think that the only reason I brought up the beginning part of that is because, you know, I'll give you this like one quick example, but I had a friend who kind of told me the story of like when they were walking the street, and it was, you know, a little dark, and maybe they weren't, you know, in a familiar place, but they were walking the street, and from across the street, they saw a dark skinned man, and immediately they kind of had this like wave of, fear. And realistically, the man was just walking home. And I remember talking to that conversation about them with them, and they were just like, am I racist? Like, is that wrong? And I'm like, actually, like, you know, like what that was misplaced fear, because dark skin shouldn't equivalent like fear to you or crime to you. But the fact that you're calling it out, like, as it is, like, those, like, you know, natural, whatever was natural for you, like, those feelings, like, that's the first step. And I think when it comes to human trafficking with men, like, it needs to be the same exact thing. Like, you need to talk about, like, what are those kind of, like, those first and natural, like, emotions or feelings you have, and then begin to evolve. And I think that's definitely, like, what I would say.
Yeah, friends, tell your dad not to make comments about women asking for it, maybe, is a good first step.
Cozy.
Well, it's just like all these little things, right, that really perpetuate this culture of like not having any sexual agency, that then leads to all these different types of situations, right? Because, I mean, sex is not bad, and consensual sex is not bad, but it's when people are then victimized that it becomes rape, and rape is bad.
Right. No, 100%.
And I think this plays into the conversation. So a few weeks ago, we had an episode about purity culture. And one of the just reoccurring themes that was brought up of women, like, from purity culture, specifically within like the Christian church, women always felt the blame, or felt the weight of it, of you need to dress modestly so your brothers don't stumble. Like, you need to do this, like, you need to do that. But I can guarantee you my fellow youth group boys never had to talk about modesty, like, never had any sort of things like that. Like, it was always about us as women, like, learning not only just to protect ourselves, but to protect them, because like they have these uncontrollable desires. And I think that leads into this exact conversation of now we have grown men in the church that like can't even just acknowledge, like, oh my gosh, like I had some really bad thoughts, and they just shove it down. And it just exactly what Josie said, and we're just perpetuating this culture of shame that feeds into this greater narrative of women being sexualized, and even going the step further of children being sexualized, and just never seeing men at the forefront of wanting to take charge of this. It's always women being like, hey, this is something we should care about.
100%.
Yeah, I was reading something the other day, and I forget where it was or whatever, but the sentiment, I was reading White Fragility. And there was this quote where they said, like, that women kept advocating for the vote, that they wanted to vote, and at the end of the day, they could talk and they could scream in the streets and they could keep advocating for themselves, but it always came down to the men had to be the one to grant them the vote. And that's kind of the situation that a similar situation that I feel like that we're in now is we as women can cry out about the injustice. We can talk about rescuing people, but if we're not all on board, how much can get done if it's going to keep being a struggle in society to even call attention to it because people are so sexually repressed?
I think even just the idea of the people that I do know that are involved in organizations or fundraising for human trafficking, like 99% of them are women. And I think even it's as small of a change as that of, so one of the organizations I talked about, Dressember, like their whole thing is they raise money all throughout the year, but their big fundraiser is in the month of December, and women wear dresses every single day and they have people sponsor them. And then on the flip side, if men want to get involved, they can wear a tie. But I know tons of people that are involved with Dressember. One of my friends, her sister actually, her Dressember like fundraiser, she actually shaved her head because a lot of the times women in trafficking, like their hair is like one of their only things that's sort of like power, and they can get that taken away from them.
Yeah.
And so like, she shaved her head for that. And I just remember seeing like all of these women being like, oh my gosh, like that's so powerful. Like, this is amazing. And very few, at least from what I saw, very few men being like, oh yeah, that's like cool. I want to get involved with that, which is just heartbreaking. Like, of course, like we're women. So like, even though like we'll never understand like what these women go through, because we're women, we have this emotion and this compassion and this empathy because we know what it's like to just be a woman in the world. And it's heartbreaking that because men will never understand what it's like to be a woman in the world, they just sort of brush it off of like, oh, I don't really have to pay attention to that.
Sure. Yeah.
Amen.
Like, need to decompress for a second.
Yeah.
So looking forward into, we'll get back to your clothing brand, Josh, like looking forward, do you think that this is like a series you'll continue? Do you think you'll use your art to advocate for sort of other important issues? Like, what do you see that working like long-term, or at least in the foreseeable future?
Yeah. This, I think for me, I was like so set on releasing this collection, and it was just like this ongoing waiting process of having enough money, of being inspired enough. And I felt like it all kind of came together at the right moment. 2020 was a year that I felt like just really good year to kind of say, you know, what I felt like I needed to say. And it was a good year for the beginning of the brand and the company fiscally. And so that was kind of like, you know, a relief of having that cushion there. But yeah, I think in terms of like what's next, I've kind of made it the way where I feel like when we have something to say, like, you'll know. And I think that, you know, the story of human trafficking like definitely needs to be told, and I hope that I can, you know, be a part of hopefully not the end, but, you know, the future of creators and artists like using what they do to put their kind of fingerprint on it and realistically like make people turn their heads and be like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen, and I want to do something about it now. And so for me, yeah, I think I don't know what the next collection will look like. I don't even know when it'll be. In the fashion calendar, it's every spring, summer, and every autumn, winter is when you're supposed to drop the collection. But I just don't live my life that way. So, but yeah, I think I always feel like when I have something to offer, my voice or the team that I bring forth and what we put out, like, it'll be because like we had something to say. And so, yeah.
Well, I love that, Josh. Thanks so much for being with us today. This is such a joy, not a joyful conversation. That's a stupid thing to say. This is such a meaningful conversation for me.
I think it's a joy to hear a man openly talk about this.
There you go. Thank you.
I will say that there was a bit of joy in this heavy conversation. So
yes, thank you. Oh my gosh. Well, anyways, Josh, tell us where the people can find you. Plug yourself.
Plug myself. Oh, perfect. So our brand is called Castles and Queens. You can find us on Instagram at Castles and Queens. The website is castlesandqueens.com. Right now we're just on social, so you can find us on Instagram and YouTube. Our new video is out. The new collection is out. 10% of our proceeds are going to my friend Monique, who I mentioned throughout the podcast, in her efforts to start her own program in Los Angeles. And so 10% of this collection will go to that cause. So I'm super excited about that. But I appreciate you guys so much. Like, seriously, it's been awesome to kind of hear you guys. And I'm super excited to see, you know, where your journey takes you guys as well.
Wow, thanks. We should have you back one day.
Yes, there's actually so many things that like I said, Josh has a really cool story, so I think we need to have him back to just talk about some other things. But also, when this episode drops, we will be sharing the video on our social media, and we'll be sharing Josie and I will pick our favorite pieces to highlight and share on our socials. So look out for that.
Yeah, and we'll definitely compile some resources for all you lazy people, you know, to help the cause, because I get it. I need resources, so I'll do the work for you. Well, friends, you can find us on Instagram at Speaking in Church, Twitter Speaking Church, because Twitter sucks. Spencer?
You can find me on Instagram at Spence Rose, and you can find me on Twitter at Snowball _.
You can find me at Josie Takes the World or Josie Takes the on Twitter, because again, you can also email us at speakinginchurch@gmail.com. And you can bitch at us, you can hate us, you can want to be on here and hate us in person, but I bet you won't. Anyways, that's it for me and for Spencer and for Josh, I guess.
Love y'all. Jesus loves you.
Yeah, stay woke or get woke. Bye.
You didn't think I was gonna let you get away with the without giving you the good old modern plugs, right? The modern day plugs. Well, I mean, most stuff stays the same. Speaking in Church on Instagram, you can find everything there. Josie Takes the World personally. Don't bother Spencer, okay? Unless you already know her, then feel free to bother her and tell you I sent her. You sent her. You whatever. If you're feeling generous, buy some merch. That's on our Instagram. That's pretty much it for the modern day plugs. I'm going to say it again, because in this season of Christian nonsense, get woke or stay woke. Stay woke or get woke. I don't even remember what order I usually say it in, because Christmas puts me that out of whack. All right, whatever. Bye.
This has been an Irreverent Media podcast.